Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast. Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
And today we're joined by Keith Stewart. Hello, Keith.
Hello. Hi.
Now, Keith, you are a dad, a gamer, an award-winning video games journalist, and now a novelist.
Almost a novelist.
Almost.
I've written three quarters of a novel.
So. Well, that's more than Helen and I.
That's it.
Well, we'll get on to all that, but you've been a video games journalist for 20 years, Keith.
Yeah, 20 years. I started in September 1995.
Wow.
A long time ago. Yeah.
How many video games do you think you've played?
Oh my goodness me. I worked out that I've probably interviewed 500 game developers. I've been to 200 game development studios in that time. I don't even want to think about how many games I've played. Just thousands.
A lot.
Yeah.
Let's say a lot.
Wow.
And I was you know, not stalking you, Googling you, that's the word. I was Googling you the
really
other day.
It's a really fine line,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a grey area, isn't it? I found out you were also a video games developer at one point.
I was, when I was at Warwick University studying the incredibly useful English and Theatre Studies degree, in my summer holidays I worked at a game studio helping them. So I did like QA, I did a little bit of mission design, I did some writing, and that was kind of how I got into it, really. So I've made games.
You've actually made a
game. So I'm one of the rare game journalists that knows what they're talking about.
Well, that's it. Because I sort of was a video games journalist for over 10 years, and sometimes still am when I need money. And
you're a whore.
Yeah, I am a whore. I'm actually a whore.
Wow, we're only 5 minutes in already. Helen's brought out the big guns.
Welcome to the podcast. But yeah, like, I've never made a game in my life. I wouldn't know where to begin. It's much easier to criticise something someone else has done, isn't it, than to create it.
Yeah, definitely.
But I like that you tried creating something and then thought, no, it's just
too hard.
Slag it off.
I don't like, because it's 2 year development cycles. I was making games, it was a year and that seemed ages. But now it's like, it takes you 3 years to make a game. And that's not, I need more.
You make three babies in that time.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely. Three marriages. So to kick us off, I thought we'd start with a theme tune, Keith, for this podcast. Which is game based?
So it's not a Keith themed.
No,
tune.
No.
All right, okay.
I've done one for the podcast. Ready?
Great, because you know so much about games. I know.
Yeah, I know. So I googled something today.
Oh,
and this is how it goes. Ready?
Okay.
Ready? This is the podcast with Keith Stewart and Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne. It is rated 18 plus. It contains swears and sexy stuff.
I like it, Keith.
That's incredible. Yeah, it's the best use of the Tetris theme I've ever heard.
Marks out of 10, professional games journalist.
Seven, obviously.
Good scores, good scores.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Excellent.
Fuck you. You've told me about the seven. I know about seven. I'm in. Solid.
Wow, she has been Googling.
So, Keith, tell us about your family.
Well, okay. Well, I have a wife, Morag, and I have two sons, Zach, who is 9, and Albie, who is 7.
And are they all gamers? Is Morag a gamer?
No, Morag is not a gamer. She's never really been into games. She had a brief period a little while ago where she was really into mobile games because I bought her quite a decent new phone. And she started downloading games and playing like things like Threes and Candy Crush and stuff like that. And she got really into it for a while.
Oh, the crush. There's no escaping the crush.
No, you can't. Yeah, but although like she has literally escaped it now. And it was really annoying because I thought for the first time in my whole career, she's actually playing games. And I thought maybe I could grade this up and then, you know, start at those games and sort of, you know, work up. Almost like a drug dealer.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, because like things like that, they're the kind of marijuana games. I thought maybe we could get up to...
That was her gateway. That
was
her gateway.
Exactly, yeah. So I thought we could maybe build from there. But
then you'd get her drunk and put a little console in her hand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
what
and
shame.
Then suddenly she's asking me for Grand Theft Auto 5.
Absolutely. Oh, so, how sad that your plans to turn your wife into a metaphorical heroin addict failed. My heart bleeds.
Spectacularly, I'm marriage survived.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it's incredible.
Helen, you're not a massive gamer, are you? Really?
No, I was in my uni days.
Right.
But yeah, I have since escaped the gaming world.
What did you play back in the day?
Oh, I played a game. My favourite game was a game called Happy Weed.
And you're a student, you say?
Yeah. So Happy Weed had these multiple levels. And like, as you were saying, so you started off trying to collect all the joints and then you moved up until you got to heroin.
Oh.
And it was like Pac-Man. Do you know this?
No, I've not heard of this game.
What?
Stuart the Guardian. He's a fraud. They've exposed him.
You are not a Happy Weed. So yeah, I got very good at that at university. The game, mother.
Yeah, not my mum. Lots of practical experience.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I was very good at, and of course playing Street Fighter 2.
Ah, favourite character?
The little wizard.
What?
There's not a wizard.
There's no wizard.
The little old guy.
What?
What Street Fighter 2? There's no old guy.
What is he? What's his special move?
The little, I like the little, what about, who is the girl, the Asian girl?
No, Chun-Li. Go back to the Chun-Li.
So we want to know more about this wizard guy.
All girls play Chun-Li.
I think you were playing too much of the Happy Weed.
Surely there was a wizard. There was an old dude. Wasn't there an old dude in Street Fighter 2?
No. There's Dulcim, who's the one with the bendy arms.
The yoga one.
Yeah, maybe that was him.
There's Blanca, the big green one with the orange hair.
Yeah. Who sort of crouched. I mean, did you play Virtua Fighter? Because that's got an old guy.
Yes, maybe that was it.
I was
mostly stoned and hanging out with my friends on, like, you know, bean bags and eating chips.
Playing Happy Weed.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great time.
I was. Share houses, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Happy Weed.
Or maybe you were actually amazingly brilliant at Street Fighter 2 and you unlocked a secret character
that no one else has ever found.
Not even Keith and I have ever heard of.
Yeah. Wizard,
What was his name, the wizard? Just make it up. Make up a wizard's name.
Merlin.
Good one, original, fresh.
Merlin the Great.
I suspect the Street Fighter team listening to this thinking, oh my goodness, she's found Merlin. We thought no one would ever find it.
All over again.
Hot wizard.
So going back to you, Keith, as you're the guest. Do you play games with your sons? What games are they into?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they play a lot of games by themselves, and they don't want me to be involved. But we play. We started off playing the Lego games, so things like Lego Harry Potter, Lego Indiana Jones. You can get everything now.
Lego Two Girls One Cup.
Yeah,
that?
Yeah, they weren't so keen on that one. It's got some really weird puzzles. So yeah, and those are really good because like when they're really little, because it's two player, so one of you can do all the puzzles, like when you're, you know, the parent can do all the puzzles while the kid just goes around smashing stuff up. But then as they get older, they get more into the puzzle element of it, so they sort of do that. So those games are really good, but lots of Minecraft. I play lots and lots of Minecraft with my sons, and that's really fun.
See, I've yet to encounter Minecraft. I've had a go at it myself,
right.
And I've just found it, I couldn't really work out what was going on. I just ended up digging in like a hole and falling into it, and then I think I got eaten by spiders.
Right.
And I was ashamed to the gaming profession, really. I didn't really, like...
Yeah, it's a weird one, because it is so... Because it is, like... really open, so whatever you do in that world, I mean there is a kind of, you can follow a sort of narrative, but mostly what you're doing is just messing around. Like when my son started, all they would do is roam the environment, attacking farm animals because there were pigs and cows in the environment, and they were just like a couple of delinquents. I've sort of tried to get them into Minecraft because it's really creative and it's like playing Lego, so you can actually build castles and mansions and everything, but no, they just wanted to wander the landscape.
Like, smashing the things up.
Yeah.
That's what guides like, yeah, isn't it? Yeah,
because I've been trying to play it more with him recently because I'm obviously doing writing this book. But I found that in Minecraft, like, you have a day-night cycle. So during the day, you can do all your creating, you can make your houses and everything. But at night, the monsters come out. So you have to get into your house, and you have to shut all your doors to make sure you're safe. And you also, each character can have a bed. And so you can skip the night, but if you all go to the bed at the same time, then the night cycle skips and it's daytime, so you can get up and start doing your stuff again. So I've actually found, like, playing Minecraft is... all I'm doing is, like, really role-playing parenthood again. Because often when we're playing the game... I'll go, right, night's coming, everybody's got to come inside now, and make sure the doors are shut. Right, can everyone get to bed now? I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing? I'm spending my leisure time, like, doing the worst part of parenthood, which is bedtime. So it's weird, but it's really sort of strangely compelling game.
So Minecraft and Lego, they're approved, Keith Stewart approved games for children.
Absolutely, they are totally safe, 100%. You can leave your children in front of those without any worries at all.
And it's no wizards, no sexy ladies.
No, exactly.
Do video games ever cause arguments in your house, though?
Yeah, because it's the typical thing. Like, we wonder how long our children would play games if we just let them. If they got up at 9 o'clock in the morning, well, yeah, I wish. If they got up at 6 o'clock in the morning and we just let them play video games, we wonder how long they would play, or whether they would literally pass out before they chose to do something else. Mm. So yeah, we argue over times, like we say, right, you can play for an hour, you can play for 2 hours, and every time that time is up, they'll always kind of emerge. Crying, angry. So we argue a lot over games and how long they can play and what they can play. Mm. And they play in my games room because we have a cellar in our house that I've converted into a games room. And they never leave it tidy enough. They leave the games out. They don't file them away properly. They put the Xbox One games with the Xbox 360 games. They're so irresponsible.
Don't take the piss out, Keith. I know exactly what he means. I like it. A tidy, orderly, you know, I've got a games box up there. It's all in order of platform. Yeah. And
I have a cupboard in which everything's higgledy-piggledy. And there's the Madagascar DVDs in the Star Wars DVD. Oh. And the scratched up Toy Story 3 is just where it wants to be.
Oh, no.
Sounds like some vision of hell, like Dante.
Yeah. And then you just close it and lock it so all the DVDs don't fall out.
Okay.
Oh, now we're coming up to one of my favourite segments of the podcast, Book Chat! Oh, see, what I like about this one, it's almost Book Chat! It's like the prequel to Book Chat.
Yeah.
So tell us about your book, Keith Stewart.
Wow.
like news night, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's about these two stupid women. One's an Australian and one's a Cockney. And like they just twat
about. I've just drawn it from my imagination. Because there could be no one like this in real life. it's about, like, I've written a series of features about my older son, Zach, who's on the autism spectrum. And he really responded brilliantly to Minecraft. And... got lots and lots and lots from it, and I think it really helped him in a lot of ways with his like creativity and also with his vocabulary, because there's lots of like technical terms you've got to learn. So I wrote a lot about this and how important the game has been to him in The Guardian, and a publisher got in contact with me and said, have you ever thought about turning this story, the basics of this story, into a novel? And so I said, no, because I've been a journalist for 20 years. I never thought about writing a novel. I don't believe that maxim that everyone's got a novel in them. I really don't. So, and I thought, I certainly don't.
I think everyone has. It's just that most of them are shit.
Yeah, maybe. You know? Yeah, well, I always think...
I've got an e-book in me. That's it.
I've got a dirty limerick.
A haiku. Yeah.
I just hope it stays in you during this. So I went to meet the publisher and I said, no, I've never thought of doing this. And my editor said, well, why don't you just write a synopsis and a couple of chapters? So I just thought, okay, well, I'll give it a go. And I came up with an idea for what this story could be about. And it is about a kind of a father with an autistic child. That was the basis of it. And about how Minecraft kind of helps them out. And the father's separated from the mother. and he's away from his child, and he's got no way to communicate with his child. But then they're both in, they become into Minecraft, and Minecraft becomes a place for them to get to know each other. So came up with this idea, and they really liked it, and they I got a contract, to a 2-book deal to do the book, and suddenly I thought, oh, this is really real. This isn't a silly joke anymore.
Now I've got to write it.
I've got to write 100,000 words.
Look, fair enough, but can I just do a limerick? Is that all
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There once was a boy who liked Minecraft. Oh fuck, what rhymes with craft? Oh no, fuck it, cancel it.
Now I'm thinking of that now. Raft does, but that doesn't really work.
Daft.
Laugh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to start writing that down in my notepad.
That's for the book launch. We'll do you a limerick.
That would be good. Yeah, I can imagine all these horrified publishing executives.
Yeah, the Times Literary Review. What's going on?
That's right.
Oh, dear. So yes, I've written 65,000 words, 70,000 words now.
Wow, so how long has that taken you?
That's 6 months so far. I took off the whole of August, and I was writing sort of about 1,000, 2,000 words a day. So it's really hard, and you really realise, like I looked up beforehand, I found a website where it had 40 famous authors, and it told you the average amount of words they wrote a day. Lots of big famous authors, and most of them wrote about 500 words a day. Apart from Michael Crichton, who wrote Jurassic Park and all those books, he wrote 10,000 words a day.
But he used to write on the tube and stuff, didn't he?
Yeah, he used to get up at 4 in the morning, and yeah, he would write wherever he was. He would write constantly. So he completely skewed it and made it look like I did an average, and he completely screwed the average. But yeah,
that's
some
a lot.
But yeah, I think
yeah.
1,000.
Yeah, it was mainly variations on, and then the fucking dinosaur come out of the bushes and ate everyone. Anyone can write that.
Yeah.
Raw. Yeah. Times 10.
The dinosaur. Yeah. It was
get
just
raw. What's a synonym for bleeding? Oh yeah, off we go. Another 10 words. Bang 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 bang.
And of course, all the Latin terms of dinosaurs, they're really long words. So
it's really filling those pages.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, but I can't do that. So I found like 1,000 words was enough for me. Mm. But yeah, it's been brilliant to do it. But I never thought I would be able to do it. So I've now got a contract and I've got to do it. Although I'll probably get sued. I think it's going to be okay. So
are you foreseeing a film? Like, is this going to be like the new Tron?
I'm thinking Tron. You're so on it. You're so gaming lingo.
Yeah, the new Tron. That was 1982.
I heard they're doing a sequel to Super Mario Brothers. Dun, 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 dun. Well done, yeah, well done.
Where's your song for that?
I fucking googled the Mario theme song today, but it didn't go with Keith Stewart podcast.
You didn't try hard enough.
What about Keith? Jinx him off a second.
Yeah. You should do that at his birthday party.
No, at my launch. You two could be Mario and Luigi.
No, no.
Run on.
I'm saving it for your funeral.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I'm Mario, you're Luigi.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh. Keith gets dragged off by Bowser.
Yeah.
It's getting all very dark and weird.
Yeah, that is, yeah. But I'm going to remember this, and I'm going to require you in my will to do this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just burst in at the back of a crematorium with no, like, none of my family have been warned.
All just go, wah, 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 wah. As the coffin lowers.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Game over. Yeah.
Yeah.
K-O.
It'd be lowered down a green pipe.
Just some gold coins.
Keith, we've never openly laughed at the idea of a guest funeral before.
Yeah, thanks.
Right?
I'm glad.
All right with that.
I'm glad, really, that I've popped that particular cherry.
Anyway, what are
you
doing?
That's a new segment that you can do. Laughing at the guest funeral.
How would you like to die?
Yeah.
What were we talking about? You've written a limerick or something, haven't you?
Yeah. We were somehow talking about Keith's book.
I wanted to ask. So, like, do you have like a special place and a time where you write? Like, do you have a special pen? I suppose they do it on computers nowadays, don't they?
I believe
not.
In the
not like
world.
When they made Tron.
No.
Did it all on an Etch-a-Sketch. Yes, I do. I write on my laptop, which is somewhere around here. Oh, yeah, behind Helen. I'll keep the Prosecco away from it. Helen blows up my knob. novel.
Have you backed up your novel, Keith?
I think
Oh, God. It makes me unwell.
Yeah, no, I think it's fine.
Like, do you have a special desk or a special
Well, we have,
ritual?
We have, through the summer, we have, like, a summer house in our garden. And I've been sitting in there. Like, Morag was really nice, and she took the kids away on, like, a series of holidays to her, like, parents' house in Malvern, and she took them away to Cornwall, and I was just sitting there in my pants writing in our summer house.
Did she, Roald Dahl? I think that's what Roald Dahl
is. Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to be exactly as successful as Roald Dahl, I think.
Yeah. Did she check your internet history when she got back?
Yeah, it's a lot of arguments.
Of course she did.
Yeah.
First thing I would do when I was like,
how's that book coming along? I just see the font size has increased to 16. You've double spaced it, so it's now 1,000 pages.
See, you've been looking for local women in your area to help you come up with narrative arcs. Well done, Keith. Yes. Be honest. Have you ever like written a bit and then just sat back and gone, "That is mint. That's genius. That is. That's a Booker winning paragraph."
I don't know. I have no. No. I think maybe a couple of lines where I thought, "Oh, that's all right. That's pretty good."
Yeah.
But no, it's very rare. Mostly, it's like going back and reading and thinking, "What the hell was I thinking? This is awful. It doesn't make any sense. These characters aren't very like progressing properly." But that's the beauty of editors. Like, I never realized. I've been a magazine editor, and now I'm a newspaper section editor. But like novel editors, you realise like how much work they do.
Almost as much as podcast editors, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, no one works as hard as you guys.
Often when Ellie and I write a joke that we think is really good, we do a series of gunfires.
I can imagine. That goes on for several hours.
Yeah, it starts off with a pistol.
But like, we actually physically mind it as well. So then I'll pull like the pin out of a hand grenade and like we're chucking it into the audience exploding with laughter.
Yeah.
And that can take up a good half an hour for her.
And by the end of it, you've forgotten what the line was that you've written.
After we've gone, we've killed them with our humour.
After you've dragged out like a tank.
That's right.
The nuclear weapon is my favourite. Doing the mushroom. That was a good one.
Yeah.
But we've got each other, so we can like suggest a joke and the other one can go, "That's the funniest thing anyone's ever said," or which happens quite often, or "No," which also happens quite often. So like, is it quite lonely? Like, you must have to trust yourself and trust your knowledge of what's good.
Yeah, I don't. But it's weird though, because I have been a journalist for so long. I can really separate myself from what I'm doing, so I can be quite dispassionate about it. But at the end of almost every day, I give it to my wife to read, and she is very much my quality filter. She reads a lot, and she would be literally incredibly embarrassed if it wasn't that good. And she won't hold back. She won't be polite. So I know when it's not that good. So she's been an amazing like quality filter. So in some ways, I'm not by myself, because she's been there for like the entire time saying, "Yeah, this bit isn't that good. Don't say that. Don't use that word."
Or if she just wants to get back to Candy Crush. Yeah, brilliant, Keith. Nice one.
Yeah, whatever.
9 out of 10.
Bake-off's on.
Yeah, exactly.
Well done. So what do your sons think of it, because it's kind of based on them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tricky. Like, I've been talking to Morag about this. Like, they know I'm writing a book, because my son, my Albie, when we went on holiday, he designed a cover for it himself. He coloured it in and made a cover for the book, which I immediately sent to the publishers and demanded that they use. But with Zach, it's kind of hard, because because he is on the autism spectrum, and he's very high up on the spectrum, but we're not, you know. I don't know how much of that he gets of what I'm doing. So he knows I'm writing a book, and I don't know how to explain to him to say it's kind of inspired by you, and I don't want to exploit him. But at the same time, it's like, you know, all writing comes from your personal experiences, obviously. I wonder, you know, when he's 18, 19, maybe he'll look back and look at this book and think, "What the hell was Daddy doing?" But I don't know, because it's not really about us. It's just the situation transposed to another set of characters,
so it's inspired by rather than
Dad. It's definitely not autobiographical, although there are lots of things that happen that he's done that I've nicked from the book. There's been loads of occasions whenever he's whenever we've gone out with him and he's had like some sort of terrible meltdown, Morag will just kind of look at me and go, "Material."
That's what our husbands do to us. The kids just shat themselves in McDonald's. It's comedy.
It's comedy gold. As soon as it's
put it in
up.
The podcast. Yeah.
I'm almost disappointed it's not really like about you, because I was going to ask you who would play you in the film of your book, of your life.
Right. I mean, obviously it would be Ryan Gosling. Because we are almost identical.
That's true.
So, yeah.
But when you turned up tonight, I was like, Ryan?
Yeah, what the hell are you doing here again?
There's been a confusion with the booking.
You're on next week, Ryan.
We've sort of thought, oh, yeah, who could be in this? Because, you know, you sit there kind of fantasizing about what's going to happen with your first book that you've ever written. So you think, what if they do make a film? Who could be in it?
I've got three syllables for you, Keith.
Okay.
Come. Batch.
Really? Oh, what do you think? Wow. What do you think? That is good. Yeah, I mean, we're gonna get a big audience with that, aren't we?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I don't mean Benedict Cumberbatch, by the way. I mean his little known brother Ian Cumberbatch. He's up and coming.
He's a plasterer. He's done a bit of Amdram.
Yeah.
He played a little wizard in Street Fighter 2.
He has seen The Mousetrap 18 times. It's got a lot of theatrical experience. Who would play you, Thorne, in a film of...
Oh.
In Scummy Mummies the movie, imagine that.
Oh. Drew Barrymore, of course.
For me or for you?
Oh, sorry, for me.
Oh, right. Yeah. You pointed at me, I was confused.
Oh, no, I was just saying, of course.
Right, yeah.
And my friend. It'd be Michael Barrymore.
Fair enough.
What?
I can do the legs thing.
And you, my dear?
Oh, I don't know. I'd want...
A young Sigourney Weaver.
I've met Sigourney Weaver and interviewed her.
What was she like?
She was brilliant.
Was she?
Yeah, I was petrified about meeting her because she was my hero when I was growing up. I loved Alien and Aliens, and I was really terrified that she was going to be awful and horrible. But she was wonderful. She was so funny, and she talked to me about her dad read The Guardian. I got a bit overexcited, and I was going, when you come to London, you've got to come to the office. Are we going to have coffee? It's like, I can imagine like, her PR people slowly coming in towards me with a crook to like.
No, there's a really nice Costa just outside the office. Yeah. It'll be great.
It's fine. Look, tell me when you're... I've got my diary here. Why don't we just pencil it in?
They know me in there. They give me extra gingerbread syrup. So lots of people do want to write a book. Obviously, what would be your top tips if you think you've got a novel? You know, what? How do you do it?
Oh, that is a really hard question. Because, I mean, because my situation was so weird and I was writing about something that happened to me. But I would say, there's two schools of thought with writing novels. One is you just kind of make it up, or, you know, as you go along and you completely brainstorm it and you write it all and you go back and edit it. Or you plan it out incredibly heavily all the way through. I would say the best thing to do is, if you have an idea, come up with a very vague synopsis. So you have a kind of a framework, so you know that you could get it out over... you could stretch your story out over 100,000 words. And then kind of start kind of improvising around that. So don't like do a massive plan. Don't just completely freestyle it. Have a kind of vague skeleton of an idea before you start. And find somewhere quiet and do it when you're relaxed and everybody writes at different times and don't try and force yourself to write a ridiculous time. Like if you're a person that writes at 8 o'clock in the morning, then that's when you've got to do it. You can't force yourself to do it at 4 in the afternoon. So, just...
And always clear your internet search history.
Yes, exactly. Because sometimes people don't think it's relevant that you've been searching for hot women in your area, even though it's obviously really important.
That's chapter 9, right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are my not particularly brilliant tips.
That's good. No, that's good. Have you ever thought of writing a novel?
Yeah.
What would it be about?
I was going to write about a girl from the country in Australia.
Oh right, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's a big slag.
She's eaten by dingoes.
Yeah. It was going to be about the microcosm of Australia, about the breakdown of multiculturalism, but brought together by dance.
Aww.
So like strictly ballroom sort of meets Footloose, yeah.
There's no racism in Australia. You know that.
Yeah. It's been solved already.
Oh, fuck it.
So now you're quite far along in the process. Is there anything that you've learned that you wish you'd known sort of at the start?
I think definitely not to try to kind of completely force yourself to write when you're just not into it. Like the stuff I've cut is the stuff where I've thought, right, I've got to write something today. I've really, really got to. And I've written stuff and it's been rubbish. Mm. I think you can sense like, it's like acting when you... as soon as you feel as though you're not portraying something, then that completely comes across to everybody else. So I think, you know, if you don't believe in what you're writing, then that is immediately apparent on the page. So although you've got to try and make yourself write every day, I think there are just days where it's just not happening and you just got to let it go. Because I think I'd like beat myself up about it, about there's been days when I've not been able to write. You just got to relax and let it go and not worry about it. So if I could go back and tell myself not to be such a dick all the time. In fact, that's probably just...
good general life
advice. Yeah, exactly. Not just about the novel. If I could tell myself at any stage in my life, that was probably what I'd tell myself.
So when is your book out, Keith?
It's going to be out in hardback in, I think it's autumn next year.
Oh, it takes a long time.
Well, no, I think I've got to hand it in before then. I don't know. I don't know if they still type it out manually. I don't know.
Are you going to have a book launch? You're going to have a...
I hope so, yeah, because obviously I'm going to get you two to come along and sing your Keith song. I mean, if you do it at the funeral, I'm not going to be there to see it.
We'll do a whole album, Songs in the Key of Keith.
Yeah.
What's the book called?
It's called Boy Made of Blocks.
A Boy Made of Blocks. Go on, Helen. Improv.
You're going to do it to Tetris. A Boy Made of Blocks!
It's quite like a Bond theme.
Yeah.
A Boy Made of Blocks! Is that more Shirley Bassey?
Yeah, I liked it. Maybe the Tetris one would work quite well. Boy Made of Blocks, a Boy Made of Blocks, a Boy Made of Blocks, he's made of blocks.
You should do that as your lawn speech.
And watch as my editor like sidles out of the room.
You know.
Maybe you could do the audiobook. Maybe we could get you to do the voice.
We want to get into audiobooks, don't we? We had an idea the other day for a 50 Shades of Grey audiobook, which is just someone going, oh, I like it. Oh, I like it. Sexy stuff. Have you enjoying this, listener?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So that's listeners now having to have a cigarette.
Yeah. Or vomit. Are you, Keith, when you are the toast of Richard and Judy's book club, will you still talk to us?
I doubt it.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, lovely. Well, what have we done, Helen?
Cracked that nut, Ellie.
We certainly have. We cracked Keith's book nut.
It's totally cracked.
So it's time for the next section of the podcast, and I've called this one Keith Solves Our Parenting Gaming Dilemmas Like Some Sort of White Male Video Gaming Trisha.
Yeah, let me mansplain video.
Because but there are like lots of issues around games and kids and yeah, even as like a gamer myself and someone who's worked in games for years, like I struggle with it. I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm hoping, Keith, that you do.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I've got a good idea of what I should be doing.
Well, let's kick off with a big one then. How much screen time should children be getting?
Well, I mean, this is a really sort of contentious area. I'm just going to look at my notes here for a second. It's a really contentious area. There's been lots of scientific research into, you know, screen time, its effects on development. And the best advice I have seen has been from the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Great bunch of lads.
And they say, they say 1 to 2 hours of screen time a day.
But what age is that?
That's over two.
Okay.
So that's, anything. They basically say before... their thing is before two, no screen time, which is really, really hard. Especially if you have a child with older siblings, then what do you do? If you've got like an 18-month-year-old who has older siblings, then how do you keep them away from the television? It's ridiculous. So I'm not so sure
about
that.
I make mine wear like a blindfold.
Right, yeah, I saw early on. Yeah, I think. And they also say, try to avoid children having... screens in their bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So make screens a social thing. So I mean, those are kind of sensible things, but obviously we all break them. But I think, if you can keep that in mind 1 to 2 hours a day, I think that's sensible. And there's lots of research to say that a certain amount of screen time is actually really good for children. It's because, we're living in a screened era. We're living in an era where, where children are digital natives. They're growing up surrounded by technology. So they need to have a certain understanding of the world. And, if you bring up your child with no screen time and no, iPads or tablets or no interaction with technology at all, you're kind of robbing them of an essential component in their
lives. They're going to be weird, is what you're saying, Keith.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Those are the children who are going to grow up and end up taking tablets because they're so bored.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Alone as well, because everyone else is going to be on Tinder. and there are lots of different types of screen time as well. So, yes, watching television is a linear form of entertainment, so it's not interactive. But there's also differences within games. There's lots and lots of really great applications for children and games which are really, really creative. So there's a company called Toca Boca that makes games like Toca Hair Salon and Toca Nature.
Or the kitchen one, Charlie.
Toca Nature is brilliant, which is just you get this open environment and you can throw seeds onto the landscape and it grows trees and different trees attract different wildlife. So you're kind of creating a garden. And it's really creative and really open and really freeform. That's very different from sitting your child in front of, a video game, a normal video game, with a little wizard in it. you have to be open to technology, even if you didn't grow up with games. I think it's a inevitable part of where we are.
Hippies.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, move
Screw
on.
You guys. Yeah. Stop making me feel guilty.
Stop playing with mud and get onto your Toca Boca. Come on. That's right.
Okay, so next parenting gaming dilemma,
mm-hmm.
Keith, Trisha. Let's say your child is 16 and they're quite mature and all they want for Christmas is this 18 rated game that all their friends are playing.
Oh, yeah.
What do you do, Keith? What do you do? Answer me, Keith.
Get off me.
Just go and send it to your friends and denial responsibilities.
Yeah. I think, it's a child by child basis and you've got to think of it in the way you do films. So if you think of an 18 certificate game exactly the same way as you would think of an 18 certificate movie, because there is no difference.
You don't believe that whole thing of because you're interacting with it, because you're the one doing the killing or causing the violence, that doesn't make it worse.
Psychologically, that's a massively complex area.
Right.
I feel the effects are different, but I'm not sure if they're worse. And, there's lots of arguments about short-term and long-term aggression effects within games. I don't believe there's ever been a study which has shown that games instigate violent behaviour more than films do, or in fact at all. It's really, really hard to show long-term effects of any media because there's so many other things going on in our lives, children have lots of influences, so it's very hard to say this is why they've done that. So, no, I think the problem is that lots of parents that don't play video games, that don't know games, kind of look at these numbers on the front of the box and think, oh, it's a video game, doesn't matter. But it does matter. The people that are putting those ratings on the front of games are the Video Standards Council, VSC, who have spent the last 40 years putting video classifications onto the DVDs.
They've seen. It's a wonder they're not all homicidal, isn't it?
I know, I met them all. They're very mild-mannered. That's when I went to see them and I was expecting these kind of crazed-looking people, but they're very mild-mannered and talk about it very sensibly. So I think what you've got to think is, would I let my child watch an 18 certificate movie? And if you feel as though you genuinely would, then I feel then it's probably okay for them to see an 18 certificate game. But if you wouldn't, then you shouldn't. And lots of parents don't understand that if a game says 18 on the cover or 16, then it is absolutely not suitable for a 7-year-old.
It's really interesting. I had a conversation with a mum today whose 8-year-old went to a friend's house and they played an 18-plus game, and they were good friends, and like it was an old brother, and she said, I find it really difficult because they're good friends, and how do you then say to your friend, your parenting choices are
shit? Yeah, it's really hard. And again, it's the same thing with films. Like, you know, you don't, you know, when your kids go to someone else's house, what are they watching on the television? Yeah. What I would do is talk to the parents and say, I do not want my child playing those games.
Mm. But that's so difficult, though. Yeah. How do you start that conversation without being sounding judgy or like a wanker, basically? Like,
I would sing it.
Yeah. I don't want my children playing those types of video games.
You're a bad mum and a terrible dad, and your kids are going to be all fucked up. But thank you for the 5 hours of free childcare, and I'll go on and do my shopping.
We can sing it as a joke.
In fact, if you after listening to this podcast, you could just play that down the phone at the. But it is difficult, but that's part of, you know, that is part of.
Let's role play it now, right? Okay, so I'm like a terrible parent. I mean, right. But also in the context of this role play, like your 7-year-old child has been visiting my 7-year-old child and playing Call of Duty.
Right. Okay.
Okay. You go.
So I'm ringing you up, am I, or are we just meeting on
whatever
screen?
I feel like that doesn't matter. It's up to you. Okay. You can choose. I feel like that's not really the point of this.
Well, I don't know. I know because I need to get into character.
Okay. Go on. Yeah.
Okay.
My name is Stephen.
What am I wearing?
I feel like I'm a tiny wizard.
You're wearing a Breton on top. Yeah.
So, Ellie, I know you're fine with Charlie playing Call of Duty, and that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But I'm just not sure my sons are mature enough to deal with.
Is it my fault, though? Is it my fault if your child's not very mature? How's that my fault?
No, it's not your fault, Ellie. Yeah. And I don't know why you're talking like this. I don't know what's going on. All I'm saying is my son...
You're trying to be threatening.
It's my fault my sons aren't mature enough to play Call of Duty Black Ops.
Yeah.
Not yours. You've made amazing parenting decisions, but because my children are so immature...
But it seems like you're saying this one's wrong, Keith, because, you know, I feel like you're judging me, because why shouldn't my child... It's just a game. It doesn't matter.
Because I'm sure your child does lots of other mature things that, you know, reads the Brontes.
Like drugs.
Well, now we're on that.
All right. Well, there we are. That's it. That's solved. That's solved.
Yeah.
Solved. Well done,
I tried
Trisha.
To solve it by putting the emphasis on me not being good enough, but I don't know.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I can see straight through that, Keith. Trisha.
All negligent parents can.
Yeah. We had a question from a listener who is a huge fan of yours and said that you're her hero.
Really?
She has a son who is on the spectrum, and that your articles are very touching, and she says, aww, thank you. So she was very thrilled that you were coming on the podcast. So thank you to that listener who
said, thank you very much.
That's very kind. You know who you are. She said she's got two questions.
Mm.
Top tips on getting games-obsessed kids into programming. How do you do
okay.
that?
Yeah.
And two, can a game encourage real-world social interaction?
Ooh, good. Yeah,
good questions.
They are good. They are good questions. So yes, with getting Game Mad Kids into programming, there are a whole bunch of pieces of software which kind of work in a very game-like way, but uh-huh. actually kind of trick you into coding. So there's one called Scratch by MIT, and this is a very, very simple programming language, mm-hmm. Which gives you the basics of a game. Like, I think you can like choose to sort of modify a little maze game, but it essentially teaches you how to construct a computer program, and you're making a video game at the same time. And it's really, really nicely presented. It's very easy to use. It's really good fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like your kids like Minecraft, they'll immediately understand the way that it works.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good. And Microsoft does one called Kodu as well, which I think is Kodu. And mm-hmm. again, it's like a visual programming language. So
cool.
They're almost like playing games.
Mm.
So you can almost trick your children into learning by telling them it's a game. So, and also there's a really interesting program, but you'll need to help your kids a bit with it, called Twine. And it's kind of, do you remember those Choose Your Own Adventure books from the 80s?
Oh, I do.
Where it was like, well, there's a program called Twine where you can create your own Choose Your Own Adventure stories, but in text form on a computer. So I would, you know, I would try any of those.
Great. Excellent. And the other question was about social interaction, wasn't
yeah,
it?
So can a game encourage real-world social interaction?
Definitely. So, you know, basically any local multiplayer game will. So if you have a Wii U and you're all around playing Mario Kart 8 or something...
So local multiplayer means playing in the
everyone
same room,
in the same
so
room
not online,
with
but
four, yeah,
together,
exactly,
yeah.
With four joypads in front of one screen. Those are really, really social. I mean, in some ways, playing local multiplayer games, so playing around one TV, is very much like that old vibe you used to get in the olden days playing board games, you know? Lots of the fun and interaction of a board game isn't what's happening on the board.
And also the misery and violence.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, yeah, families falling out over
and
Christmas.
The potential for broken windows.
Yeah, I have broken families.
Sorry, it's just
And also playing creative, cooperative games online. So, you know, I keep going back to it, but games like Minecraft, where if you're playing Minecraft on a server or online with eight friends and you decide on a project you want to make together... then there's lots of communication involved in that. Mm. And, you know, obviously, because my son is autistic, I know there's lots of Minecraft servers which have been set up to help autistic children, set up specifically for autistic children. And they have, it's been amazingly beneficial to children in terms of, like, developing their social interplay. So if you have to work together to solve a problem in a video game, that is a social skill. So. Mm.
Awesome.
Excellent. I like that.
There we go. Good answers. Mm. I feel like good. And awesome. Well, I feel like we've probably solved all video game parenting.
I'm so glad we have to role play again. That was terrifying.
That's weird. I know.
Are you going to do that again with any other guests? Why didn't you role play with Jane Garvey?
Oh, we did, but Ellie edited it out.
Right, that's important.
Now, I'm quite excited about the next part of the podcast. I have invented for you, Keith Stewart, a video game. It's called Keith Stewart, the video game. Yeah?
I like it already.
It's a Keith-em-up.
Right.
Or, if you like, a first-person Stewarter.
Oh.
Please don't leave.
So,
no, it's a brand new genre, right? It's a brand new genre.
Okay.
So you mentioned earlier the old text adventures. I don't know if you played these, Helen, where you had, like... on a computer, and it was all just words, and it was like you are standing in a room and there's a key on the table and there's a so I've written Keith Stewart the game, a parenting themed audio text adventure.
Wow, this sounds incredible.
Okay, here we go. Chapter 1. Keith Stewart, you are standing in a hospital room. I'm doing my Jane Garvey voice.
You are
There is a chair and a bed and a door to the north. Your wife is giving birth on the bed. She is making a lot of noise. Chevron. And when I say chevron, you have, like, it's like...
Right, I've got to do the thing. Yeah. Okay, go north.
Incorrect.
Oh, no.
Your wife wants a divorce. What you should have done is apologise for getting her pregnant, for being a man and not being able to have the baby yourself, and for everything you've ever done. Chapter 2. It is your child's first birthday. Perhaps unwisely, you have chosen to celebrate by eating out in a restaurant. On the floor below you is most of your child's food, and on each of the four walls around you is the rest of your child's food. The other diners are getting huffy-puffy, and the waiter is giving you angry face. Chevron.
Apologise for everything I've ever done.
Incorrect.
I thought I could play the system.
What you should have done is throw your own food on the floor, adopt a comedy foreign accent, and claim that this is the custom in restaurants in your country. Sorry for any misunderstanding.
That was the second thing.
Final level. This is the boss level. Right?
Okay.
It's the end of the game.
Because I've done so well so far.
Done so well. You've reached the end of another hard day of parenting. Your child is in bed at last, and you are sitting in the kitchen. There is a door to the south. On the table in front of you is a bottle of wine, a corkscrew, and a glass. Chevron.
Ignore glass, open bottle, drink straight from bottle.
Oh, almost, Keith. What you should have done is go south, go through the door, go to the Tesco, buy another four bottles of wine, and then start drinking.
Oh, Ellie Gibson. Jason.
Good game. Oh. Good game.
Well, that was Keith Stewart, the game, the sequel, Keith Stewart 2, where you have to parent two children, is out next year. And of course, there's Keith Stewart multiplayer, where you have to go to a soft play party with 28 other parents. That's available as DLC.
A downloadable extra. Yeah. Okay.
And there's Keith Stewart Anniversary Edition, which is where you forget your wedding anniversary. So it's a whole franchise.
I got 3 out of 10 for that.
So the next section and the penultimate section of this podcast is Keith Saves Christmas. So in this part of the podcast, what we want you to do is use your wisdom to help us for Christmas presents. Please. So video games, I guess, were a big part of your childhood, my childhood. Well, we had an Amstrad, of course.
CPC
464? No one had an Amstrad.
Oh, we had an Amstrad.
Really? No wonder you've grown up so messed up. No. You're doing this podcast.
We played Leisure Shoot Larry, I remember.
Leisure Shoot Larry?
That sounds better.
A load of lesbians shoot Larry in the face. I would love
this
that.
This sounds like a good game.
Leisure Shoot Larry. Nice.
Leisure Shoot Larry.
Absolutely.
That's very... I mean, The Guardian would definitely review that.
Oh, God. I hate leisures. No, I don't hate leisures. I don't love... I mean, I'm not...
I just almost spat my perspective out.
I'm very supportive.
So for any parents out there who are looking to maybe buy a games console this Christmas, which one is the best, Keith?
What, for children...
For like a family machine.
Yeah, I mean, the Wii U is a really, really good machine. It doesn't have that many games, but the games it has are brilliant for families. So Mario Kart 8, Nintendo Land, Super Smash Brothers. They're really nice games that you can all play together. And it's a lot cheaper than the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One. So I think that's a really good machine. If you're going to buy another one, I would say maybe a PlayStation 4 and something like Lego Dimensions, which is a new Lego game, which is kind of like Skylanders and Disney Infinity. So you get to build Lego toys and put them onto a portal, and those toys are transported into the video game world, which is quite cool.
Mm. What about Sega Mega Drive? Is that gone?
Yeah, it's gone. It's a long way. I've actually written...
Sega? Yeah. The famous console Pete Seeger released.
The best ever Sega game was Sega Rally, where the game over, when you crashed your car, the game over tune went, game over, yeah! And it's brilliant. You've got it. If you've never heard this, go on to Google, if you don't believe me, and put in Sega Game Over Yeah, and you'll find a video of this.
I'm going to incorporate that into Keith Stewart the video game. Yeah. I like it.
Parenthood Over Yeah. If your kids are disappointed about anything in life, you could learn from Sega. So you could go, boyfriend's finished with you. Yeah.
GCSE, yeah!
It makes everything better.
Do you think when they realised they finally just had to withdraw from the hardware market, they went, Dreamcast over, yeah! Niche game show, there we are. Yeah. That's the niche well game show you've been waiting for.
That's for Ollie and Rufus, isn't
yes.
it?
Who's Rufus?
Rupert.
Yeah.
Rupert, sorry.
Oh, dear. What good games are out this Christmas, Keith?
Lego Dimensions looks quite good for kids. Skylanders Superchargers, although it can get expensive because you have to buy all the toys. If you want games that aren't suitable for children, they're really
always
good this year. Yeah, Metal Gear Solid 5, Phantom Pain's really, really
is
good.
Is it, though?
Yeah, it's good.
No, it's just nonsense, though, isn't it? It's just gibberish.
Okay, all right then, it's just gibberish. You've completely seen through the whole thing.
20 years experience, Ellie. 20 years!
Emperor's new clothes!
It's 20 hungry
years!
Hippos.
I've got 10 years! I've won awards!
You're half as good.
Twice as long!
I'm half as good yet twice as jaded. What are there any good adult games? That sounds like sexy games. 50 Shades of Grey video game.
Yeah. There is actually, there's a game called Rinse and Repeat on PC.
Ooh.
And it's a game where you have to scrub a hunky guy in a shower. That is a real game.
You've played it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you? Yeah, so it's on PC, so I would recommend
but
that.
But it's not PC.
Well, then what's not PC about scrubbing hunky men in showers?
I don't know. I don't.
You got all flustered.
She's gone bright red.
Yeah. Oh, stop it. I guess we're talking about Christmas now, but what does the future hold, Keith Stewart from The Guardian? What's going to happen in the future, man?
Well,
first of all, no one will be saying man.
Yeah, exactly. Not in that way.
That stopped in the 80s.
All right, sorry, dude.
So I think virtual reality is going to be a thing next year. There's lots of virtual reality headsets coming out. So there's Oculus Rift, there's the HTC Vive, which are going to you can plug into your PC. There's the Sony's PlayStation virtual reality headset. So virtual reality is going to become a consumer reality next year. Mm. And the big question is, are lots of people going to use it? Because it's a bit weird sitting in your living room with a helmet on. Like, they've solved a lot of the problems that used to be involved with virtual reality. Like I tested virtual reality headsets when I was a game developer in 1993 or 4. Wow. And I spent a lot of time with terrible migraines and throwing up in our work's toilet. They've solved.
But it was the early 90s, kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I can't blame that entirely.
It was in Manchester.
It was probably more to do with the Stone Roses than virtual reality.
Baggy pants.
Yeah, massive baggy trousers that I was wearing. Those huge hoodies.
Yeah.
Virtual reality, augmented reality are going to really, really change the way we think about screened entertainment. Mm. In lots of really profound ways. But I think the headsets have got to get smaller. So it's going to be really expensive for a few years. But everything.
It's like the mobile phones of the 80s, man. I mean, dude.
Yeah, man.
It is. You have that big like brick-shaped thing in your pocket.
Yeah.
And like, everybody said, like, you know, whenever people used to look at those things, people said it's only ever going to be sad yuppies that have this. But now everybody's got a smartphone.
Yeah.
And in fact, the Nickelodeon researcher who I spoke to said that 35% of children under 11 now have a tablet of their own.
Blimey.
So, you know, we are the next generation is so digitally native that to them, putting on a headset and being immersed in a virtual world isn't going to be weird. Like, we think it's weird, but it won't be to them. So
their children are just going to be brains in jars, aren't they?
Exactly. If they have children. Yeah. Their children will be like, Tamagotchi on the screen.
People be giving birth to calculators during this time.
Congratulations, it's a lovely adding machine.
Right. It's a Casio.
It's an Amstrad.
Right.
Oh no. Oh, it's okay, God. We can offer you support. Yeah. It's a leaflet.
Ellie, I was just the first time I met Ellie was at a gig. And she was doing a stand-up gig, and she did this hilarious
joke. I know, you're supposed to say it's a stand-up gig, not like a stripping gig.
Yeah. Those other ones she was doing.
She was really into folk.
With her Seeger.
Yeah.
love folk.
But one of the jokes that Ellie did was that she did a joke about a couple who had got to this point into the relationship where he said he'd only have sex with a woman if she was wearing a mask of Billy Piper or Kimberly from Girls Aloud.
Right.
And so I was thinking...
Very, very highbrow political satire.
Yeah. So this is one of the first jokes I've the first time I ever saw Ellie. But I can see now that you could take that to the bedroom if you say, you know, I'm only going to bone you if I...
if I'm looking at Bono.
Oh, my God, can you imagine?
Oh, my God. So you could, like, program in.
Yeah.
Like, go, right, who are we going to be tonight? I'm going to be on that person and you can be...
And you put your headsets on. But then wouldn't they kind of, like, bang together while you were doing it?
What, you mean you look at each other when you have sex?
Face to face. That's hilarious. But they're weird in Somerset, aren't they? Yeah. So weird.
Wow. Okay.
Jesus Christ.
Go on, who would you have, Helen, in your VR?
Oh, John Cusack.
Joan Cusack?
John Cusack.
I was going to say, not since university.
Oh, no, because I was going to say you could be Joan Cusack, but then that would be really weird.
That's too weird.
Go on, Keith, who would you know? You don't have to say one of us just to flatter us. Just keep that to yourself. Yeah. That's what you're thinking. It'd be weird.
That's how we usually end the podcast.
We don't want to make it weird.
For God's sake, no.
I've come up with a really good idea.
Let's Dragon's Den it. I'll be Valentine.
Right, so...
A bitch!
What should I do?
So you would have these virtual reality things that would farm your Facebook and all your computer and then create your ultimate fantasy land for you, like with your songs, pictures, like create your house with pictures of friends and like a happy place. So things that would read your life and take you into a place. Yeah, so you'd have food that you might have taken photos of and it would cobble together all your happiness.
Right.
Yeah.
But the problem.
Or you could just make the food that you like and yeah, go just... see one of your friends. Yeah. That would be my suggestion.
But you know, like, I could go create my happy place from Australia and like put all my memories together and like pictures of, you know, like you could do that.
What if it got kind of the wrong end of the stick and you'd written something online about the terrible time you'd had in Australia,
but
awful boyfriend, and you put your virtual reality headset on and there's some guy coming at you with I don't know what Australians look like.
Yeah, he's holding a boomerang, singing Crowded House.
Yeah.
Or what if you'd taken a photo of a really bad meal you had for TripAdvisor? Mm. I love how Helen has this beautiful, idyllic sort of idea of the power of technology.
Yeah.
I just smash it like this.
Yeah, yeah. You're living in like the country living magazine.
Yeah. I'll be like, no, in Britain, nobody's happy, and that's how it is. Yeah, take your jolly idea and fuck off back to Australia.
It's got to be a hellish dystopia, or we're not interested.
Oh, well, there we are. We've solved the future of gaming. You've invented the future of virtual reality.
Yeah.
What is it now? What's happening
now? It's a Scummy Mummy Confessions. We're nearly at the end.
Right,
we've nearly completed it.
You do one.
What's Keith going to get for completing this podcast?
So my Scummy Mummy confession is that today, quite excitingly, Charlie had his first play date with the school friend. Charlie just sort of started shouting butt at me and just generally being sort of, I think I'd said you're a silly sausage or something. So it was, I did start it, which culminated in Charlie shouting at me very loudly, "You're the manager of the butt factory!" Which... I could not help laughing at, and thereby obviously endorsing implicitly.
Yeah.
Helen, have you got a confession for us?
Well, I wanted to just sort of follow up from the happy weed conversation, because when I was in university, I boned this guy called Aeneas. We were both playing happy weed on the same computer, and he was at the highest score, and then I played it, and then I got the highest score. So you know when you type in your name for the highest score for a game, I wrote Helen is on top of. And then the next name was Aeneas, right? And then I sobered up and went, fuck, everybody on the university network can see this. So I stayed up all night and got better at that game. So I cleared my name from the top score until dawn.
Oh, wow. Bless you. You weird idiot.
So I had to save myself from social embarrassment from saying Helen is on top of Aeneas. Anyway, so now he flies helicopters in the army. I don't know.
Wow.
Great.
That could have been you, see?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we've come to the end of the podcast.
Oh, sadly.
Game over, yeah.
Correct.
Get out. We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have enjoyed it, please tell your friends. Please keep listening. Please subscribe on the iTunes and follow us on Twitter.
That's right. We're at Scummy Mummies. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram.
Well, thank you so much, Keith Stewart, off of The Guardian, for being a brilliant guest. Have you enjoyed yourself?
No, it's been rubbish.
Until next time.
Bye-bye. What was that film that about? Was it called The Wicker Man? You know,
the one where they put
put a man in a
Edward
wicker
Woodward.
Man. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's a bit like that, isn't it?
Is it?
What is a bit like that? This
it
whole
goes into,
podcast.
Yeah. No, never mind.
Anyway, Keith, if you'd like to step this way.
Oh no! Oh Jesus Christ! No!
Don't remember it being Welsh.
We welcome all accents on this podcast, Ellie.
No, The Wicker Man was like about a weird rural community on a Scottish island.
No, yeah. It was another... No,
are you thinking of Tron?
I think you're right. I think it was Tron again. It was a guy who was like a simple lawnmower. The lawnmower man.
Look at you getting...
The Wicker Man!
Just because they've got man with God, you feminists are all the same.
It's like that football team, Manchester United. What? It's nothing to do with it.
Shut up.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.